Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today it's time to worship. Today we'll be looking at the clans of the Levites. Now, the chapter focused primarily on the locations where the heads of the clans of these families lived, scattered through the land of northern Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. Now, the majority of them were swept away by the Assyrians, but we have Levites because they were scattered throughout the nation that survived, particularly of the southern kingdom. Now, the Levites that survived, in fact, all of the Levites, were broken into three teams. One third of them ministered in the tabernacle and did the priestly duties we think of. But the other third of them served by chopping wood, gathering water, and making incense and oil. And lastly, the last third were devoted to worship. Now, let's look at verse 48. Their fellow Levites were assigned to all the other duties of the tabernacle, the house of God. But Aaron and his descendants were the ones who presented offerings on the altar of burnt offering and on the altar of incense in connection with all that was done in the most holy place, making atonement for Israel in accordance with all that Moses, the man of God, had commanded. So here we see a division. That's why it speaks of the clans. Certain clans within the tribe ministered at the altar, and others did things when it was at the tabernacle, like setting the tent up and taking it down. They were like the people in a church plant, unpacking a trailer and packing it back up. But you know, that was still considered part of the worship of God. Think about the people at your church that fold bulletins or run the overheads or do the sound checks. That might not seem like a big deal, but without it, the worship of God might be affected differently. Personally, I wouldn't mind if we didn't have any of that and we just sang. I mean, what a novel idea. I'm sure that's what the early church did. But anyways, God considers whatever is done for him, no matter how small, an act of worship. Verse 31 talks about, "These are the men David put in charge of the music in the house of the Lord after the ark came to rest there. They ministered with the music before the tabernacle, the tent of meeting, until Solomon built the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem. They performed their duties according to the regulations laid down for them." Besides seeing the name He-Man in the Bible, I get excited about some of these other names, like the Kohathites and the sons of Asaph, who were amazingly gifted worship writers. In fact, we have some of the Psalms of Asaph in the Book of Psalms. You know, if you're musical, this is really good news for you. I don't know if you realize this, but studies show that when we play music, it stimulates all the lobes of our brain. The only other practice in all of human experience to do that is sleep. It seems that music is so hardwired into humanity. In fact, it was one of the early things invented back in Genesis. If you remember, about the time they learned to start working with metals, they also learned how to make music. Watch a baby freeze and stop what it's doing as soon as it hears music play. It's actually crucial to the human experience, and think about it. If it stimulates all the lobes of our brain, then God is using something that connects to the very deepest part of us as human beings to express back to Him who He is. Music is one of the greatest gifts that God ever gave us. Now think about it. You can tell someone, "Hey baby, I love you." But when you make them a mixtape, you're putting some emotion into that puppy. You're packing your sentiment with a ton of feeling. I want you to think about worship like this. The two greatest things that we have in the human language to express that we love someone is poetry and music. Worship is what happens when we put the two together. You'll know that a love poem becomes a love ballad when you put music behind it. And ballad means power. And that's what we're looking at in the book of Psalms. You read some of those Psalms that were written by Asaph here, and you can see that this was a man whose heart was on fire. Asaph was one of the three Levites that David enlists to help with the singing at the temple. And he actually is He-Man's assistant. Not He-Man, the master of the universe. No, but the guy who led the worship in the praise of the master of the universe. Asaph performed the dedication of Solomon's temple in 2 Chronicles 5:12, and the psalms he wrote were number 50, 73 through 83. One of the most famous of these is Psalm 73, where Asaph talks about how he envies the wicked. Have you ever felt that way before? like you see other people, they're not even following God and everything seems to go their way. The psalm opens like this. Truly God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet almost stumbled, my steps nearly slipped. For I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. They have no pangs until death. Their bodies are fat and sleek. By the way, being fat back then was a good thing. I mean, you're pretty well taken care of. And sleek was kind of like saying, they're shiny, they're healthy. Shiny people, happy, shiny people. For the rest of the psalm, Asaph is in trouble mentally. He doesn't understand what box to put all of this in. But in verse 16, he says, but when I thought of how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task until I went into the sanctuary of God. Then I discerned their end. Asaph goes into the temple and he begins to worship God, and that changes everything. All of a sudden, he realizes who is on the throne and who is eternal. And more importantly, for this context, who is not. When he says, I consider their end, he means where it's all going. You know, all of those people he envied, those wicked, they don't exist anymore on planet Earth. They're in eternity now, and they had to stand before a righteous and holy God. When Asaph understood that, it put everything back into perspective. That in the end, it was all going to be worth it. By the way, that's what worship means. Worship means worth-ship. It means that God is worthy. He's worth it all. He's worth everything that you offer to him. And by the way, the Bible talks about praise as the fruit of our lips. It's offering from our heart, because out of the heart, the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Therefore, when Asaph is worshiping, he's praising with his mouth. Praise, by the way, the singing you do on a Sunday morning, that's not really the Hebrew concept of worship. It's a part of a much bigger concept that they had of worship, which involved your life. The praise of your lips, the fruit of your lips, what you sung was an overflow of the heart. But that wasn't worship itself. We may call what we do on a Sunday morning worship, but it's just a piece. You see, to the Hebrew, you worshiped God at work by the way you worked. You worshiped God at home and amongst your neighbors by how you treated them. Even the way you treated animals was considered a part of your worship. You were kind to animals because God made them, and you knew how to treat them. To a Hebrew, worship was how you lived. And when you came into the temple of God, or you sang to him, it was your words matching your actions. An anonymous quote says, if I believed 1/10 of what I say I do, I'd be 10 times more excited. What about you? Are you worshiping God? Worship him by yourself and worship him when you come together. Graham Kendrick likened worshiping God together and by ourselves to what it's like for someone who plays soccer. They might kick the ball around the yard all week by themselves. We call that practice, but the real game happens on the weekend. Where two or more are gathered, Jesus said, in my name, I'll be right in the middle of them. And don't forget, Jesus said the Father is looking for those who will worship him. He's seeking them out. Who worship him in spirit and in truth. Read 1 Chronicles chapter 6 today, and as you do, be one of those who will worship God in spirit and in truth. We'll see you tomorrow on your journey through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.